Fast forward to the end of 2024. Think of your goals. What can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If you want to learn a new language, you absolutely should get Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I absolutely love Babbel because their courses help me learn real-life conversational skills. It's so easy to learn how to order food, ask for directions, speak to the locals without having to consult language apps. Babbel has over 16 million subscriptions sold. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time offer for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, at babbel.com/SPP. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/SPP. That's spelled BABBEL.com/SPP. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, baby. Welcome to the Smart People Podcast. Sit back, grab a drink, tune in your brain.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
This nation will rise up.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Virgin Voyage of Smart People Podcast. I am Chris Stemp.
And I'm John Rojas.
And we are the hosts of this podcast coming to you. First, I guess we'll tell you a little bit about what this is, why you're listening. Smart People Podcast is exactly what it sounds like. We will interview every week a smart person on a random subject, and we promise it will be interesting and you can trust the information.
We also want everybody to keep listening because the quality will increase, as we mentioned. We just started doing this podcast. We're just trying to get everything down, figure out audio levels, etc. Keep listening. You'll hear very good guests and hopefully better audio quality.
Basically, you know, how we came up with this was, I'll give you a little background on our story. Roach, by the way, as he is commonly known, and I will refer to him as that, except in interviews. Roach and I used to live in Arlington, Virginia. Graduated in 2005 from James Madison University, and we were on the adult track, if you will. Pretty good jobs, big companies, not as big paychecks, but you know, can't complain. And we kind of decided to pick it all up, get out of there, move to Scottsdale, Arizona, at least over the winter, and try some things out. And this was a creation of it.
Yeah, we wanted to figure out what we really wanted to do in life. Still don't know right now, but figured that this would be a great hobby, a way to meet interesting people, learn all kinds of new things.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of actually a good lead-in. You know, the reason we came up with this kind of specific topic and this format is, you know, we don't know what the hell we're doing. And if you can talk to people in various fields, everything from, you know, astrology to security to nutrition and philosophy, you can learn something along the way. As they say, you can always learn from your elders, right? So anyways, that's what it's about. That's our story. We promise, especially in the future, we're not here to talk. We're not here to bore you, give much of our opinions. we kind of want to provide a forum where you can tune in every week and be promised a good podcast by somebody who deserves your attention. Also, I'd like to plug real quick, we do have a website that's up and running, smartpeoplepodcast.com. Go ahead and check that out. We will post the podcast there, bios of the people. You can comment, ask questions, anything like that. We also have a Twitter, which is
Smart People Pod. You can find our Twitter name on the website, and also on the website, as well as the guest bios. We'll also be linking to their books, websites, etc. So if you find any of these guys interesting, you can support them, pick up their books, check out their websites.
All right, so without further ado, we'd like to introduce the first topic that we have on Smart People Podcast, and that is nutrition. We chose nutrition because both of us have been, you know, in sports our entire lives and tried to keep in shape. And most of you know it's tough to find good information out there. I mean, you can, from various sources, you just find all types of conflicting things. So we figured, where can we go to get, you know, the best scientifically proven information on everything, on what you should be eating, how much, what's in the food, things like that. And we actually found a great guy. So in trying to find out correct nutrition advice, we came across Dr. Walter Willett, who will be our first guest. We got lucky that he, you know, he agreed to be on our first podcast, as we're not well known. We don't have an audience at this point to offer him. But let me just give you an example of how smart these people really are that we're going to be talking to. He's not only an MD, he's also a Dr. PH, which is Doctor of Public Health. He is a professor of epidemiology, nutrition, and medicine at Harvard University. He also is the chair of the Department of Nutrition at Harvard. He's published over 1,000 scientific articles regarding various aspects of diet and disease, and he's the second most cited author in clinical medicine, which I thought was actually really interesting. He's best known for his book, Eat, Drink, and Be Healthy.
And one of the most interesting things about Dr. Willett was his food pyramid that he came up with in comparison to the food pyramid that has been followed by people in the United States for over 50 years. I actually got a chance to have some good conversation with Dr. Willett prior to recording. We were discussing the fact that low-fat, non-fat, cholesterol-free has been around for a long time, but it turns out that this is actually an unhealthy lifestyle. And Dr. Willett went on to say that the trans fats found in these products are actually higher than if you were to eat foods with healthy fats. He mentioned that not all fats were bad and that the healthy fats have benefits to them. So we're going to go ahead and pick up the interview at that point, and here's Dr. Willett. One of the main focuses then should be calories. Is this correct?
Calories is really important. I mean, there's no single one factor to focus on in diet. In some ways, I liken diet and nutrition to an orchestra. You've got to have all the pieces there, and they've all got to be working in harmony and to produce either good sound or, in case of nutrition, good health. So the overall amount of food we eat represented by calories is really important because if that's more than the calories we're burning off, we're going to be gaining weight. And that has become probably the number one nutritional issue in the United States is overweight and obesity have gone up. We're starting to pay huge health prices for that. But calories is important, but the quality or the type of calories we get is very important as well. We already talked about the type of fat being really important, but the same applies to carbohydrate, that carbohydrate is neither good nor bad, but there are good carbohydrates, meaning whole grain, high fiber forms of carbohydrates, and bad carbohydrates, which are sugar and refined starches. Unfortunately, in the American diet, the large majority of calories are from the bad sources, refined starch and sugar. Also, the protein choices make an important difference. It's not just the protein per se, but it's the protein package. So about the worst is beef or red meat, because that protein comes along with a lot of saturated fat and cholesterol and probably some other things in red meat that increase the risk of heart disease and diabetes. But protein in the form of nuts and beans, soy products, vegetable sources of protein, in other words, and a moderate amount of fish and poultry, that combination of protein can be very healthy, particularly when we use that to replace the large amounts of red meat in our diet. So, well, those are really the important things to consider when we're talking about calories. It's the total amount of calories is very important, but the source of those calories is equally important.
I guess on the, along the same lines here, I was wondering your take on things like grass-fed beef or wild-caught salmon. Do you think that if you stick to more organic, naturally raised food products, protein sources, meats, is that going to, in the end, be healthier? Can you eat more of it, say, if you don't eat grain-fed cattle? And things like that. Is that
we in reality don't have much direct data that bear on that question. That's something a lot of people ask, but I suspect that it's not going to make much difference. Actually, maybe a little bit difference with grass-fed beef compared to grain-fed animals, but the grass-fed beef are still going to be high in cholesterol, and because actually the cholesterol comes from the lean part of the meat, actually primarily, and that's going to be just as high in grass-fed animals, or even higher because the fat content's a little bit lower. And it may be there's quite a bit of evidence that it's the heme iron, the form of iron we get from red meat, that is causing part of the problem. Also, so I think the best thing to do is actually, whether it's if you like to have beef, the main thing is to have it in small amounts. And if we're having it in small amounts, I don't think it really does make too much difference whether it's grass-fed or grain-fed. Some of the environmental effects actually may be quite important, and for our long-term survival and well-being, that certainly is an important consideration.
I wanted to take a step back to when you were talking about starches with potatoes and rice, et cetera. In your, I guess, revised food pyramid, you have whole grains as being a very important block of that pyramid. Can you give some examples of how you should eat whole grains throughout the day, how much you should eat? For example, with lunch, what whole grains should be included to make sure that you're getting enough whole grains for the day?
Sure. As you say, whole grains do turn out to be really important because the natural whole grain has not just a lot of fiber in it, but a lot of minerals and vitamins as well. And when we refine that grain, we're taking away the fiber, we're taking away the majority of the minerals and vitamins. And so we've really stripped the grain of its nutritional value, and what's left is the starch. And it's become very apparent that that starch, just like sugar, actually has adverse metabolic effects. And particularly if it's a form of grain that's been ground up into fine powder, like flour-based products such as bread. And those that form of carbohydrates absorb very rapidly, makes our blood sugar shoot up, creates a much larger demand for insulin production by the pancreas, and in the long run, that increases our risk of type 2 diabetes and heart disease and other conditions as well. So the form of the grain is very important, and we should be looking for the whole grains. That it's not very hard to do that. The whole grains are a lot more available in stores than they were even 10 or 15 years ago. So that means instead of having white bread, having whole grain bread, and it should say on the ingredient list as the first ingredient, whole, either wheat or whole oats or something like that. You want to see that word whole there. If you're having rice, it means having brown rice instead of white rice. If you're having pasta, having whole grain pasta instead of white pasta. And I think that those are all pretty easy trade-offs. The one trade-off that's not so easy is that there's no such thing as a whole grain potato. And so potatoes are, what we eat is almost all starch. And that does have the same metabolic adverse effects as large amounts of white bread. So keeping potatoes really low in the diet is another important thing to focus on, and there is no whole grain version of that, unfortunately. There's no exact amount of whole grain that we can specify. The main thing is, if you are having grains or potatoes, really be converting those to whole grain forms and really trying to minimize the refined form of grains. And what many people find, if they're really just consuming whole grains, weight control becomes easier because that large amount of fiber is more satisfying, and it stays in our stomach longer and leaves us less hungry between meals.
And another important aspect of weight control is obviously exercise. And on your food pyramid, I mean, it is the bottom block, which I find, you know, very interesting that that's really one of the, I guess, first times that that's been included. Now, with exercise, I mean, times have definitely changed compared to people, you know, working in fields and factories. They used to get exercise throughout the entire day. And now, you know, most people sit behind desks or have jobs where they're not getting as much exercise as those that worked in the fields. What does a normal person need to do to make sure that they get enough exercise in a day? What is your recommended amount? And how can we, I guess, as humans, make up for the fact that we're now working more sedentary jobs as opposed to the physical jobs that we used to in the past?
Right. That's absolutely true. In the past, we didn't need to think about getting exercise because it was just automatically part of what we had to do in our day-to-day activities. But now, as you say, most of our lives involve sitting or driving or watching television or otherwise relaxing in a chair. So we have to really make a conscious attempt to make sure we've got physical activity built into our everyday life. And the amount is, in general, the more the better, but it's actually surprising how even a fairly small amount of exercise compared to someone working in the fields all day can still be very important for our health. And that is, the amount of exercise is, that's our minimum amount we should be aiming for, is about half an hour a day of moderate to vigorous activity. That means like walking fast, not just walking slow, but walking fast or running or really being active enough to work up a sweat. And if you're just walking, if walking is the only part of it, then you need to probably walk about an hour a day to get the minimum amount of activity that we really need. More is better. And it's also what we're seeing is it's useful to do not just this aerobic kind of exercise where we walk fast enough to breathe a little faster and work up a little bit of sweat, but also to incorporate resistance training or muscle building kinds of activities into our daily or weekly pattern. And it's impressive, even 3 or 4 times a week of resistance training. That means like using elastic bands or weights to strengthen our muscles. That's very important as well. In part, that's one way of getting upper body exercise that we otherwise don't very often get. But using those muscles and strengthening those muscles actually means that the muscles take up blood glucose more effectively and reduce our need for insulin secretion. And so it really amazingly, just you can see that within hours of being physically active, metabolically we're better off because our muscles are taking up the glucose and reducing our need for insulin. So the important part is to be building into our daily life almost every day some form of physical activity and trying to at least 3 or 4 times a week incorporate resistance training as well.
I actually wanted to really quickly, I know we're running out of time here, but I wanted to ask you a few questions about things that are very prevalent today in the news, people hear a lot about, and I think we can get confused about or not sure what advice to follow. The first thing I was wondering was basically, I've been hearing a lot, you know, about antioxidants these days, drink pomegranate juice, you know, drink green tea. I wanted to know if you had any insight on why there's a big push for antioxidants, and is this push valid? Does science and research back it?
Right. That antioxidant area has been very challenging scientifically to get clear answers on that, and that's, I think, probably one of the most important reasons for some confusion in the general public, because people hear from little pieces of science that antioxidants are important, and then a study may come out and be null and not show anything. Part of the reason is that the long-term effects of antioxidants are very difficult to study. They are almost surely important, because our metabolism, just in functioning on a day-to-day basis, creates a lot of oxidative stress, and the body has a whole complex system of antioxidant defenses to dampen down damage from that oxidative stress. And that may be one of the reasons why we have so many redundant systems, even for protecting us from oxidative damage, that it may be that adding some more from pomegranate or supplements or something like that may not make a huge difference, because this is so important. We're already have a lot of built-in defenses from oxidative stress. But there is some evidence that oxidative antioxidants can be helpful. One of the best examples comes from the Physicians Health Study trial, where over 22,000 men were randomized for either beta-carotene pills or placebo, and there was no change in heart disease or cancer, but after 18 years, the men on beta-carotene actually had better cognitive function. And that's really, I think, a very important finding, because it took 18 years for that benefit to show up. Almost there was no other study that's been that long, which I think is telling us that many of the studies that have been conducted are sort of naive. They just haven't gone on for long enough to see the sort of modest but important cumulative effects of benefits of antioxidants. And it was the first direct effect. First drug demonstration that antioxidants can be beneficial for protecting the brain from the decline in cognitive function that goes is typical with aging. So I don't think that study means we should start taking beta-carotene pills, but it does mean, I think, that we should make sure our diet does include lots of fruits and vegetables, particularly dark green leafy vegetables and orange vegetables like carrots that are a good source of beta-carotene. We don't want to be short on that. So I think the general evidence doesn't suggest taking pills necessarily, but making sure we eat a diet that does have lots of antioxidants in it. I'm not so much a fan of pomegranate juice, because most of that has a good bit of sugar added, and that probably outweighs any benefit. But having a pomegranate, having a variety of vegetables, particularly green leafy vegetables, dark orange vegetables, is an important part of everyday healthy diet.
Okay, that's good to know. Maybe clear up a little bit. Also, you mentioned, you know, weightlifting, how that, you know, can be very important. And I know that growing up doing a lot of weightlifting, I was kind of pushed towards doing protein supplementation, you know, what almost seemed like overconsumption of protein through powders and bars and things like that. Do you have any stance on if that protein, you know, the amount of protein recommended is necessary, and if overconsumption can cause damage, especially through the methods that are available, such as powders and drinks and such?
I don't think there's any good evidence that those really make very much difference. It's really actually the physical exercise itself that really helps build up strength. If we were really protein deficient, the supplements might help, but very few Americans are actually protein deficient. If you're having a variety of a varied diet with some combination of meat or eggs or dairy products or beans and nuts and whole grains, you're going to get enough protein. And adding protein supplements on top of that is very unlikely to have much additional benefit. Now, if those supplements are really protein, it's probably not going to be harmful unless it's taken in huge amounts, but you really need to be careful because a lot of the supplements out there do contain hormones in them that can have adverse effects. And so I think it's really better, again, to go get our protein from food. Again, the protein doesn't come in isolation. It comes as a package with fat, and you want to have protein sources that have healthy fats, which tend to be the vegetable sources of protein and fish. And we get other minerals and vitamins when we eat those protein sources as foods that we don't get those necessarily taking protein supplements. So the bottom line is that you can be absolutely healthy and strong, and you don't need to take protein supplements.
Okay, great. All right, well, I guess in summation for us, and for maybe for our listeners who haven't had a chance to read your book or have seen the food pyramid recommendation that you have, could you give a quick synopsis of how you believe, you know, we should be eating today, and, you know, just a general idea of how to be healthier through the food that we use?
Sure. It's really not too complicated. And just describing our pyramid, and for those who don't have it in front of them, right at the base, as you mentioned, we put regular exercise, physical activity, and weight control, because that really is important, and almost all of us need to consciously build physical activity into our daily life. I would add, by the way, it doesn't necessarily mean going to the gym. You can build it in the way you get to work. I ride my bike to work every day, so I automatically get half an hour of physical activity right there. That does make a difference. I'll try to do more on top of that, but that's a good base. Then at the next level of our pyramid, we really put side by side whole grains and healthy fats. And that's out of the reality that everyone is going to get the vast majority of their calories from some combination of carbohydrate and fat. And what we've seen is it doesn't matter exactly what that percentage is, or percentage of fat, calories and fat or carbohydrate. What's really important that we get some combination, and that they be healthy forms of carbohydrate, the whole grains, or healthy fats, which are mainly the vegetable plant oils. Then at the next level, we put fruits and vegetables, and we should be consuming those in abundance. We did not put fruit juices there quite specifically, because it's way too easy to get an overdose of sugar from even 100% natural fruit juices. We should be consuming them in small amounts, if at all. We really should be consuming fruits as whole fruits. Then at the next level, we put vegetable sources of protein, beans, including soy products, and nuts. Those really have a lot of positive health value. And if you want to be a vegetarian, you can get all your protein that way. But if you want to be an omnivore, it's good to have some of those. And then you can also have some protein from fish, from poultry, small amounts from eggs as well. And fish, especially the fish, are good to include because they are a good source of omega-3 fatty acids. Then at the next level, we put dairy products, and that's the most complicated area because there are some good nutrients in dairy products, but we see that overconsumption, like 3 servings a day as recommended by the U.S. Food Guide Pyramid, is really too much. We see that men have higher risks of fatal prostate cancer with the equivalent of 3 glasses of milk a day, either as milk or as cheese. And that's an overdose of dairy products. But if you have one or maybe 2, sometimes 2 servings of dairy products, that seems to be okay. But you don't really need to have any. In fact, most of the world doesn't consume dairy products if you can get enough calcium from an otherwise healthy diet. Then up at the top, we put the foods to use sparingly. And that doesn't mean you have to totally eliminate them. If you like them a lot, you can have them, but have them now and then, not on an everyday basis. And that would be foods like red meat and butter, which do have a lot of saturated fat and cholesterol in them. But even more importantly, up there at the top, we put the refined starches and sugar, the white bread, white pasta, white rice, sweets made out of sugar, and especially sodas and other sugary beverages. Those foods, actually most of them are at the base of the U.S. Food Guide Pyramid, but those foods have lots of empty calories in them. They lead to weight gain, diabetes, heart disease, don't have positive health benefits. So those are things we really want to keep low in our diet. Unfortunately, they are the single biggest source of calories in the mainstream American diet. And that's probably that big amount of refined starch and sugar is probably now our number one nutritional problem.
Thank you very much. I'm sure our listeners will be healthier after this. So we really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day. I know you have a lot to do there at Harvard, but thank you so much. And we'd like to reiterate to our listeners that Dr. Willett has a few books out. The most popular would be Eat, Drink, and Be Healthy, which is a great book that that we recommend everybody pick up to help them live a healthier life.
Thank you very much, and good to talk to you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Guys enjoyed that, and I wanted to mention the music on the podcast today has been provided by The Outdoors, and their music can actually be found on the web at theoutdoors.bandcamp.com.
Well, I'd like to point out that I was talking to Dr. Willett off the air, and I asked him about is one drink of alcohol a day good for you? And he said there's some truth to that. One glass of beer or wine a night is good for you if you're over 50 years old and at risk for coronary heart disease. So for most of the people listening to this, no excuses. Again, thanks for tuning in. Be sure to listen next week when we talk to world-renowned sports psychiatrist, Dr. Michael Lardon. Dr. Lardon's going to talk to us about how to get in your zone, how to journal your own dreams, and a little bit about Tiger Woods. So see you next week.
Take it easy.